an hour, he's there, that we can put our eyes on him and follow him. So we will not stumble. We will not be led astray. We will not seek false idols. We will not leave empty and useless lives or purposeless lives. But we'll seek him. We'll follow him. That's what it means to be a Christian. About love, I have to say I'm a little bit concerned. I am a professional counselor now. I have my degree. I just got my degree now. It's in there. I didn't post it on Facebook yet, but it will come. So I've been looking forward to this very moment of posting that. 3 years of hard work has gotten my degree. And you see a lot of people struggling with love. This world today, I believe love is in trouble. There's a lot of pressures all around us to live up to incredible pressure. To do all these things, to live up to expectations, being breadwinners, being successful, even maybe go and have a dream of going on TV or something. We see all these perfect people, and we spend a lot of time living up to a lot of stuff that the pure relationship, love, good old friendship 101 is suffering. Of course, that's my opinion. It doesn't help that we spend a lot of time in isolation. You might not call it isolation. Depends on who you ask, right? If you sit with your iPhone, people say, that's not isolation. I sit and chat with everyone. A Barna Group study came out that teenagers, that's that corner right there. I mean, not everyone is included here, but teenagers, they spend an average of between 11 and 13 hours a day on social media, on digital media. And that is beside homework and school-related stuff, okay? They say, there's hardly 13 hours in the day, right? It's like, how do they do that? Maybe we should ask here, how do you do that? Not me, not me. Well, anyway, it doesn't really help. That is not what we created for, really. We're not created for just sitting there and having relationship with short text and emojis and little smileys. That can be a nice, you know, part and compliment, or what you complimentary part of relationship, but it's not the essence, really. So I'm a little bit concerned. And then you have a lot of people growing up nowadays in really dysfunctional family. It's been all the time, but in a way, we don't really learn a lot about love growing up. A lot of people, they have really no clue, right? Because you grow up and your parents are all caught up in this world and you don't learn a lot. Now, if love is in trouble, I also believe that romantic love is in double trouble. I'm a marriage counselor and I really see how hard it is to have a relationship, both for myself, for everybody else. First of all, you have all these challenges that we see for love and real relationship, real friendship in this world. And then, on the other hand, we have so high expectations for a relationship. Because nowadays, that's the only relationship, deep relationship you really get, huh? That's all you get. Because we don't really have a whole village of support, of family right there, neighbors, friends, to be there connected with us anymore. That's a thing of the past and of different worlds. In South America, it's different. You live together. You maybe too much, you know. You're like bunged up in families and neighbors. But here, we live isolated lives, and we put a lot of pressure, a lot of expectations on the romantic relationship that we don't really, most of the time, have the tools to really live up to these expectations. So that was a little short introduction to the love factor. But there is hope, and that's the good thing. There is hope. We can love, we can look at love, we can help each other love, and we can do that here as a church. That's what we meant to do, really. There's a lot of things we can relearn. There's a lot of things you might know that you can teach others. There are some holes that we can fill in each other. We're a community, and we can learn looking at Jesus, looking at God, and be inspired. So the love factor. We know that God is love, and Jesus is God, so when we look at Jesus, we see pure love right there, right? This is it. Every breath, every word, every deed, it's love. So we're going to look at him, and we're going to take a close look at this scripture, John 15, 12 to 16. If you have a Bible, look up there. That's going to be our main thing for the next 25 minutes. I know some people are going out and give blood, and they can just, you know, fade out, and I won't take it personal, I promise, if you leave. See, there's a lot of things we can learn from Jesus, but some of it is not really so realistic, you know, and we cannot be hopeful to do exactly all the same things that Jesus did. It's hard for us maybe to, you know, we can't do all the miraculous stuff that he did. We can't raise the dead, we can't open the eyes of the blind, we can't walk on water. Unfortunately, it would be really nice to do. But one thing we can do, we can imitate him in love. And in fact, we're encouraged to do that. He says, you need to imitate me in love. That's his prime command. My command is this, he says, John 15, 12, love each other as I have loved you. That's the prime command. That's the first command he gives us. And the most important, love God and love each other, right? So the first point I really want to make here is let love rules. Love rules. It looks like kind of a song or something. Love rules. Maybe there is a song. I don't know. It could be a song. But love rules. It's the first thing that we learn about when we follow Jesus, really. Love is king. Everything serves the king. Jesus is love. We're going to serve each other. Everything else comes second to loving God and other people. Even meeting today, everything else serves the purpose of loving God and each other. That is king. You know, many things can rule our hearts, as we talked about. It might not be the purpose of loving others. It might be the purpose of living up to others' expectations, working hard, making something good out of your life. But Jesus has a very radical point here. He says, first of all, you know, love. Love as he loved is number one. He says here, if you go one verse further, greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. So one part of love is really sacrificial. You know, you lay down your life. There's a lot of things you can lay down your life for, right? You can lay down for political purposes, for a great career, for success, for your family. A lot of people say, especially men, they would say, you know, I lay down my life, I really be a good provider. That's my purpose in life, which is not bad. I mean, that's a good thing. But that's not all to love, right? Because our standard is Jesus. And Jesus wasn't exactly the classic, you know, Western American good provider, right? Could you imagine him having a family? Well, let's give all our stuff to the poor, because that's not important. That's what he said, really. He said, blessed are the poor. Not blessed are those who have plenty. And this part of the world, we feel blessed when we have plenty, right? We work to have enough, and maybe more than enough. And maybe what we think is enough is way more than we ever needed. So Jesus have another sense of love, too, that's not just providing and giving our kids a better chance than we had or just as good. It's part of it, but not it. Now, there was an interesting book that came out some years ago. It was a nurse who wrote the book. Not many nurses write books, but she did. And let's turn that to the kind of cover page. Her name was Bronnie Ware, and she wrote about the top regrets of the dying. Because she took care of dying people the last 2 to 6 weeks of their lives in their homes about her whole life. And she had some interesting findings. And she wrote down, what is it that people think when they're dying? Anybody heard of that book? Or of her findings? Okay. But I'll just read a little bit about it, because it's kind of interesting to know, you know, at the end of everything, what's your perspective on life? So she writes here, just a few excerpts. For many years, I worked in palliative care, whatever that is. I don't know the word. My patients were those who had gone home to die. Some incredible special times were shared. I was with them for the last 3 to 12 weeks of their lives. People grow a lot when they are faced with their own mortality. When questioned about any regrets they had or anything they would do differently, common themes surfaced again and again. Here are some of the most common. First, I wish I had the courage to live a life true to myself. Not the life others expected of me. This was the most common regret of all. Second, I wish I hadn't worked so much. This came from every male patient that I ever nursed. They missed their children's youth and their partner's companionship. All of the men I nursed deeply regretted spending so much time of their lives in the treadmill of a work existence. Now, third, I wish I had the courage to express my feelings more. That's what men says. That's pretty incredible, isn't it? Because that's not what you hear from the standard male now. I wish I had the courage. We spend so much of our time trying to not express our feelings, trying to repress our feelings or pretend they don't exist. But at the end of our lives, a lot of men wish they had expressed more. They had been closer. Because that's how you get closer to people, really. That's how you know in love. It's by expressing feelings, understanding other people, and all that stuff. So people wish they had done that. And then one last thing. I wish I had stayed in touch with my friends. Often they would not truly realize the full benefit of old friends until their dying weeks, and it was not always possible to track them down. Many had become so caught up in their own lives that they had let golden friendships slip by over the years. There were many deep regrets about not giving friendship the time and effort that they deserved. Everyone misses their friends when they're dying. I think it's a pretty powerful message to think about at the end of the line. What is it worth lying down your life for? Now, there's another point in this. Jesus says, he goes on in verse 15, I no longer call you servants because servants does not know his master's business. And I was thinking of that. I was thinking many great leaders, they have servants. They have people helping them out, accomplishing their purposes in life, right? Serve their successful careers. And in our consumer society, many times we pick people that serve our purpose in a way. We have a project, we have something we want to do, we have needs, and people become projects in that pursuit. Even in marriage, it's happened a lot, you know. I want my partner to serve my needs, really. That's what I think it's about. It's to be a servant. And instead of, Jesus wasn't like that. He loved people deeply for who they were. And they knew his business. They knew what he was about. They knew him. He wanted people not to be servants because love rules. That's part of the love factor. Here comes a second one. In verse 15, instead I have called you friends, for everything that I have learned from the Father, I have made known to you. The second thing is love is knowing and being known. So love rules, but love is also knowing. I mean, if you think about that, Jesus, he shared everything with his friends, with his disciples there, that he learned from God. We know he shared feelings. There's the whole area of feelings expressed in the Bible. He shared fears, he shared hopes, he shared dreams. He didn't share much of his sin because he didn't have any. But for us, I know I need friendships where I can be really known, where I can express myself, where I can just share everything about me, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Jesus, he was famous for really knowing what was in men's heart. He always knew. But the good thing about Jesus, he knew and he loved. There's a famous passage about a sinful woman. For some reason, Jesus, he was a lot about sinful people. He spent a lot of time, a lot of sinful women who were outcast in the society, they came to him. They found comfort. They found love in him. So one of these days, a woman goes out. Maybe she's ashamed. She comes out in the middle of the day, the blazing sun, where nobody's at the well. She sneaks out all by herself, and Jesus is there. And he initiates a conversation with her. At the end of this conversation, the woman runs back, and what does she say? He told me everything. He knows everything about me. But he still loves me. Because this wasn't just some kind of exclamation. It was like she went and told the whole village that, come and see this guy. He's amazing. Because that was the kind of love he had. Jesus knew people, and he loved people. Peter, at the end of the whole thing, at the end of the time he was following Peter, Jesus said, Lord, you know all things. You know that I love me. It's a beautiful scene. It's the last encounter between Jesus and his next follower, his next leader in the whole movement. So this is like the world's largest movement, right? Ever to come. And Peter's going to be the new leader. And this last meeting with him, he doesn't discuss, you know, let's make a 5-year plan now for the whole worldwide takeover of religion, worldwide religion or whatever. Let's make a budget and a leadership development program or whatever. He doesn't. He just asks him, Peter, do you love me, right? Because that was the most important thing. Remember the love they had. And Peter said, Lord, you know all things. You know me. You know the love. Because Peter also knew. He knew that he was known and he was loved. And that was enough for him. So, sometimes it's hard. Love is hard, right? Because it takes work. Friendship is hard because it takes work. And it takes vulnerability. It takes risks. It takes a lot of risk to try to come out with who are we in here? To be made known. In a relationship, in marriage, that's often the biggest problem. We have our busy lives, we have children, we have everything grown up, and we start to lose touch with each other. Who are we really? What are our hopes, dreams, fears? What's going on in here? And we grow so much apart, it starts to crash, then we start to be critical because we don't know each other's needs and these needs are not being fulfilled because we don't know them. We don't know each other's dreams and we're not working for each other's dreams. We work against each other in a way without knowing it because we're not known. It takes a lot of hard work. Elizabeth and I, we've been living now in 3 countries the last 4 years. So many things have happened. So we really need to make sure we get the time to talk about what's going on. I have to admit, I'm the type of guy, sometimes I have no clue what's going on inside me. Most guys, we're like that, you know. So that's why God gave us a woman. Because the woman knows more to talk and ask and share feelings. And talking with Elizabeth, I get to know who I am. Talking to God does the same thing for me. So God and my wife, the most important thing. But it takes time to know and to be known. That's what Jesus says. That's what he does. He says, everything I have known, I've made known to you. Everything I've learned from God. Everything. I'm an open book with you guys. He knows people and he loves them. Now, there's something even more challenging. In, I guess there's no, 1 John chapter 1, it says, if we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship with one another. That true fellowship, it takes light on our hearts and thoughts, dreams, hopes, and fears. What's going on? That is true fellowship. That's hard to do in a text, right? A message. I mean, we have the emojis to express emotions, but they're usually happy, right? So everything you finish up with a smiley. It's positive, right? So you always got to, that's my strategy for social communication. Everything has to end with a smiley, otherwise it could be misinterpreted, right? So, because we're always happy. That's the most important. Anyway, the problem is that it is so hard to really be known, to be in the light. Because if people really know us, what's in there, are they still going to love us? If we walk in the light, we know we're darkness. It's going to be a problem. Most people, most of us, we are so filled with shame. Ever since Adam and Eve, they hid in shame because of the sin. We've been doing the same, right? We don't want people too close. We don't want people to ask too many questions. Even our marriage may be struggling, not fulfilling, going down a bad angle, but we don't want people to know because we spend so much energy trying to keep the good appearance and the facade up. It takes so much energy out of us that we didn't have time to risk going a little further, deepening our relationship, making ourselves known, walking in the light. And if we do, we're scared to death because we might risk the people, they look us differently. But if we want true fellowship, if we want love, if we want friendships, it takes risks. It takes that we risk a little bit, exploring who we are with other people, with our spouse, even with our children. We need to open up and explore, tell, let light in. So the good thing about it, this is really deep. This is another sinful woman that comes up to Jesus and he accepts her and she feels so good because, you know, back in the day, those people, they were outcast, you know. If you were a sinful woman, you had so much shame. But for some reason, she could come to Jesus here. She could cry. She could let her heart out. And Jesus says these very amazing words that whoever has been forgiven little loves little. But she loves much because she has been forgiven much. So when we come and we understand who we are, the good, bad, and the ugly, when we explore ourselves with people, with God, we're able to love more. Because we know who we are, right? We don't want to do that. Most people don't want to do that. We have an incredible capacity for deceit, for self-deceit. We don't want to explore the deepest corners of our soul. We want to leave it there. We want to fill us up with everything else, not to touch that place, not to go there, not to look at it, not to let light come in there. So we'd rather sit in front of the TV. We'd rather go and get entertained. We'd rather go to have food and dinners and see sports and everything else than really looking in here and getting those things out. But those are the cure. The light is the cure. It's not the darkness. When we're forgiven much, when we see how much forgiveness we need, when we take a good look at ourselves, we will love much. That's what it says here. That's what Jesus says. Then we'll love much. Not when we try to be perfect, everything is okay, I'm fine, you know, my life is going well, whatever, all that stuff. We don't learn how to love. We go on, John 15, 16. He says, "You did not choose me, but I chose you." Love is a choice. God made a choice. He chose people to love, to cast his love on, to make himself completely open, to spend night and day with, to know about him, not to just be his servant, to lay down his life for. He chose people. Now he chose you, if you're here, to really make, to love you, to make him known for you, himself known for you. And we need to choose others. We need to make a choice. I want to love. I want to love you. There was a great movie coming out back in the 90s calling I Choose Us with Bruce Willis and Michelle Pfeiffer. It was about this struggling marriage. And they had all these problems going on, and they were going to go each its way. But at the end, it all comes down at the end of the movie, and she goes like, there's all these tears and all this history and all. And she goes like, I choose us. You know, I really choose us. It's a really touching moment, because there's so many things else you can choose in life, right? But choosing us, choosing the relationship in your marriage, this is what we're going to build. This is what we're going to have, great love. Choosing your kids, choosing your friends, this is whom I'm going to cast my love on, is something great. That's what Jesus did. That's what we can do. We know from a lot of studies that most men don't have friends. That's a fact. If you have a friend that really knows you and you're male, you're unique. Men have a different... Most men really long to have friendships, but they don't know how. They don't know how to be open, how to look at Jesus, and if you're a Christian, whatever, and see what friendship really is about. It's much easier to go with the flow, do what's expected of you, come to church, come to work, see sports, but having real friendship is hard. Jesus chose people to put his love on. And people saw that. There's an incident here in John 11 with one of his friends, Lazarus. People looked at Jesus and said, see how he loved him. Because they saw that Jesus really loved this man. I want to be like that. I want to be a person where people see, wow, see how Matt really loves his wife and his children. See how he loves other people, how he's a friend. Now, even his disciples, they felt loved. They felt chosen in love, right? You know the scriptures in John? The Apostle John, he continuously described himself as what? The disciple whom Jesus loved. That was his identity. That's kind of cool. Like, I'm the disciple who Jesus loved. Here's a couple of scriptures. One of them, the disciple whom Jesus loved was reclining next to him. That's himself, right? In John 21, Peter turned and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved. Instead of seeing, saw me or whatever, because he was the one writing the book. I want to be able, you know, that would be awesome to be like that. To be really fair, I always, you know, wanted to describe myself as one who had some degree of success, who was good at this and that, who had the respect because of some achievements, whatever. But following Jesus, I want to be like this. I want to be a person where my wife decides, I am the one loved by my husband. You know, I want her to feel like that. I want my kids growing up feeling that I'm a boy loved by my father. That's who I am. I want to have friends who say that. I'm the one loved by me. That's the goal, because that was what Jesus was about. That's how people describe themselves. That's why they sacrificed. They were willing to go so far. That's why Peter came again at the end, because he remembered the love and the great friendship they had. Love is a powerful thing. It's more powerful than anything else. So John described himself as the disciple whom Jesus loved. Why was that? Was he just this incredibly lovable guy? He had a long journey. He was a pretty maybe arrogant, aggressive guy in some ways. Remember the time when they went into a village and they rejected him, and they say, let's call fire down on this. Hey, Jesus, how about calling fire down on that village, because they didn't listen to us? Let's kill them all. That was not a very spiritual, loving thing to do, right? Most people would agree. It's maybe the temptation to abuse your spiritual powers. Now we raise up, we're almost like Jesus, you know, we can do great things and we can abuse our powers. There was another episode. He's a very ambitious man. Jesus was talking about, I'm going to die. I'm going to leave you. I'm going to a place you can't come. Everything else, you know. I'm going to die on the cross. I'm going to be killed. And John, what does he say at the first? Can I be your right-hand leader then, you know, in the kingdom? Can I take over and be your new leader? That's kind of how he put it. Not a very sensitive thing. Not a very loving thing to do. But still, Jesus believed in these guys. He loved them. He knew them, and he loved them to the full. So he could say, you know, I'm the one loved by Jesus. At the end, John became known for millennia as the apostle of love, right? Because he talked about love more than anyone else. This guy who was arrogant, aggressive, and, you know, self-serving, ambitious, he pretty much only talked about love in his letters. Way more than anyone else. Like seven times more than all the apostles. He talked about love and love and love and love. Because what? He had seen love. He had experienced it in himself. You cannot give what you do not have. You need to have it before you can give it. He was shown love with everything he was, good, bad, and the ugly, and he could give it on. He knew what he later wrote here. We love because he first loved us. We love because he first loved us. That's why we love. He said, the disciples there, we got so much love from Jesus that now we can love others. And you see from history how much he poured his life into other people. We even know some of his disciples. Was it Polycarp? Who sacrificed other of his life to other people. We know that it's dramatically changed this guy's life because he was loved first. That's what we can do here as a church. We can love others who can love others in return. That's what we need to do. We need to have the love of God in our lives. We need to have the love of each other in our life. Build that up so we can go and do great things for God. That's Jesus' way to go. He had learned the love factor, actually. That's what he had learned, John, from being a plain, normal guy in the world to shining with love wherever he went, talking about it. It's all about love and living it. So just to finish off now with another scripture of John, the apostle of love, what he says. This is how love is made complete among us, so that we will have confidence on the day of judgment. In this world, we are like Jesus. In this world, that's what we strive for, to be like him. So I want to encourage every one of you to go home and take a good look at Jesus with these eyes, to be like him, to love like him. Take a look at the gospel with new eyes, with the eyes of love, the eyes of learning how to get the love factor that Jesus had, that you can be approachable, loving person that people will run to, even outcasts, not fear of judgment. People from every walks of life, they'll walk to us. Not because we have great answers, we have great convictions, we have great churches, that's a great deal too, that's a great thing too, but because we have love. They know they're going to be loved. They're going to be seen by us. They're going to be known by us and loved by us. That is to have the love factor.